The Helsinki HN meetup write-up is one of those posts that's less about news and more about the texture of a community. Cal Patterson's account of a Hacker News meetup in Helsinki covers what it actually feels like when the people who write the internet's most technically dense comment threads meet in person, which is, apparently, much like you'd expect, but warmer.
The piece captures something that people who've been on HN for years recognize. The median commenter is not the socially awkward archetype that internet communities sometimes reduce to. They're curious, they're opinionated, they're employed in interesting places and working on interesting problems. A meetup in Helsinki specifically is notable because the Nordic tech community has a distinct character. Deep roots in telecommunications and embedded systems, strong open source culture, less of the Silicon Valley growth at all costs orientation.
The Gravity is Worth Asking About post is a genuinely different register. It's a philosophical argument about the value of asking foundational questions about things we take for granted. The specific example is gravity, but the argument is really about intellectual humility. The most obvious features of our reality are often the ones we understand least deeply, and treating them as settled forecloses discovery. The HN discussion engaged seriously with the epistemological argument rather than dismissing it.
The ACMQ piece on 8 myths about software engineering and Gen AI is the highest engagement piece in the developer tools space today at 189 comments. It's a research-backed list of claims about generative AI and software development that the authors argue are either false or significantly more complicated than commonly presented. Things like Gen AI will replace most programming jobs within 5 years, or code generated by AI is less secure than human-written code. The paper examines the empirical evidence behind these claims and finds them ranging from unsubstantiated to actively misleading.
The HN comments were predictably strong opinioned, but what was interesting is that the disagreement wasn't between AI will take all the jobs and AI is a toy. The substantive debate was about measurement. How do you even operationalize AI is replacing programmers as a testable claim? Lines of code are a bad metric. Deployment frequency is confounded by other variables. Developer satisfaction surveys have their own biases. Several researchers in the thread noted that we genuinely don't have good empirical instruments for measuring the productivity effects of AI coding tools at the population level.
Pi's minimalism piece is the editorial that generated the most interesting business analysis comments. Pi is an analytics platform, and the argument in the post is that its intentional simplicity, a smaller feature surface, fewer configuration options, a more opinionated data model, is turning into a competitive advantage against platforms like Databricks that have expanded feature surfaces that require significant expertise to navigate. The auto-research functionality they've built around the simpler model is apparently reaching results that the more feature-rich competitors struggle to match for common use cases.
This pattern, the incumbent expands features to serve enterprise needs, creates complexity, and creates an opening for a simpler entrant targeting the 80% use case, is one of the most reliable dynamics in enterprise software. Salesforce created HubSpot's opportunity. Oracle created an entire generation of more opinionated database tools. Databricks is an extraordinarily capable platform, but there's a real cost to that capability that shows up in onboarding time, required expertise, and operational overhead.
The auto-research angle is the differentiator worth watching. If Pi has built an AI-assisted research layer that lets a non-expert get substantive analytical output without needing to know Spark configuration or cluster tuning, they've potentially turned the expertise gap into a feature rather than a barrier.
Now, I want to spend the second half of this segment on a genuine intellectual challenge, because I think the most confident claim circulating in the HN community today is worth examining carefully. The Maple preview result, a 20 billion parameter ternary model at 120 tokens per second on an iPhone, generated significant excitement, and the implicit conclusion many people are drawing is that on-device AI inference has crossed a threshold where cloud inference becomes optional for most use cases. That's the confident claim. What if we're wrong?
I'm glad you're raising this because I've been chewing on it. The argument for the confident claim is straightforward. 120 tokens per second is fast enough for conversational interaction. 20 billion parameters is large enough to be genuinely useful. And ternary quantization preserves enough quality that the degradation is acceptable. Therefore, on-device AI for general use cases. Achievable now.
Here's where I'd apply pressure. The benchmark is 120 tokens per second, but that's almost certainly measured under controlled conditions, specific hardware configuration, specific model loading state, specific thermal environment. An iPhone under real-world conditions is managing background processes, thermal throttling, battery management, and memory pressure from other applications. The gap between benchmark performance and sustained performance in a deployed app can be substantial.
That's fair. And there's a quality question that's harder to measure than speed. Ternary quantization works well on benchmarks that measure general capability, but performance degrades unevenly across task types. Tasks that require precise numerical reasoning or careful logical chaining tend to suffer more than tasks that reward fluent generation. So a ternary model might score similarly to a full precision model on a general language benchmark while performing noticeably worse on the specific things that matter for a given application.
The deeper assumption to examine is whether good enough for most use cases is a stable claim. The use cases that currently seem addressable by on-device inference are the simpler ones: quick lookups, text summarization, short-form generation. But user expectations about AI capability are rising, and they're rising against a baseline of cloud models that are being improved continuously. Good enough today may not remain good enough as people's reference point moves upward.
There's also an update distribution problem. Cloud models can be updated instantaneously for all users. An on-device model is frozen at whatever version was shipped, and updates require a new app download. For most use cases, that's fine. But for anything in a rapidly moving domain, security, current events, evolving terminology, the staleness matters.
So what's the "we're wrong" signal to watch for? If the ternary model approach is hitting a ceiling rather than a launch pad, we'd expect to see user retention drop-off in apps that deploy these models after novelty wears off, specific task categories where quality complaints cluster, and difficulty maintaining quality parity as cloud models improve. If instead we see rapid iteration on the training methodology, quality parity on more task types, and developer adoption spreading, then the optimistic read is justified.
The honest answer is that we're somewhere in the middle of a capability transition, and both overconfidence and excessive skepticism will lead to missed opportunities or wasted resources. The right posture is impressive result, genuine caveats. Watch the medium-term quality trajectory.
Before we leave this segment, there's a curriculum corner moment embedded in the Pi versus Databricks story that's worth unpacking, because the data analytics space is one where antitrust questions are increasingly relevant. Databricks is a massive player. Their last funding round valued them well above $60 billion. And as they've expanded into adjacent markets, the question of market power comes up. So let's take 60 seconds on how antitrust law actually works, because it's genuinely misunderstood.
The foundational text is the Sherman Act of 1890, which prohibits contracts or combinations in restraint of trade and prohibits monopolization. But here's the key thing people get wrong. Having a monopoly is not illegal. What's illegal is the act of monopolizing, acquiring, or maintaining monopoly power through exclusionary conduct rather than through competition on the merits. Winning because you're better isn't illegal. Winning because you've structured your contracts, pricing, or technical interfaces to prevent customers from ever leaving, that's where antitrust exposure begins.
The market share alone isn't enough point is critical. To be found liable under Sherman Act Section 2, a company generally needs both a dominant market share. Courts have historically looked at figures above 70% as a threshold for serious scrutiny and evidence of willful acquisition or maintenance of that position through anti-competitive means. The classic analogy is a natural monopoly that just happened to be first and best. A town with one plumber isn't illegal. A plumber who buys all the pipe inventory to prevent competitors from entering is a different story.
In the data platform context, the scrutiny would focus on things like Does Databricks structure its licensing to make data migration prohibitively expensive? Does it use technical interfaces that create artificial lock-in beyond what the genuine complexity of the product requires? Are there exclusive dealing arrangements with cloud providers that foreclose competition? The market share number matters less than the conduct that generated it.